Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Right, and hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 188, and it's a new year. It's optimism, it's 2024, the sun isn't quite out, so I can't say that there's a lining of the sun shining on a new day or anything like that at the moment, but it's a new year, and with that brings a lot of optimism and promise. So first off, before we dive into it, I hope everyone enjoyed, the new year and all the holidays that occurred before. Certainly myself, got some nice time off, a little vacation time. So it was nice to get away, but it is also nice to get back. And of course, we have a lot to get back into here on the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gungaruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And yeah, I mean, if we're to quickly look, the Vancouver Whitecaps, first off, someone needs to talk to MLS. I think it needs to be said that just like put a signing embargo from like December 15th to like December 30th. Like, especially, it was funny because like the Columbus Crew won MLS Cup and it was like less than 24 hours later, they're like, oh yeah, all the, what was it? There was like the half trade window and some of the trades that were getting thrown about it. Drew Yearwood's moving on. I'm just like, I don't like, it'll be something that maybe in a few months we'll be talking about. Like, I just don't care. Respectfully, like, one, they let Columbus enjoy their championship, let some people enjoy the time off, and like, and now do all your signings, like, fine, like, you know, business is business, and then just announce them all on like January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, whatever, get the ball rolling with the new year. But that's just my personal note. All that to say that we do have a lot to talk about: some Whitecaps signing, some Whitecaps schedule releases, some rumors, some draws, because there's a lot of draws in December, CONCACAF Champions Cup draw. Lots to talk about. Before we do, Sam, how's it going over the last, I guess, nearly month it's been of just rest and recovery, R&R?
Exactly. Need to have an off season for everyone, so it's been nice to take a bit of a step back. I totally co-sign your sentiment that, it's crazy to have roster transactions and things of that nature going on days after the MLS Cup is handed out. But you know, the off season stops for no one. So we've got plenty to dive into here. I hope everyone had a happy, joyous end to 2023 with your holiday celebrations and all that. And very much looking forward to diving into some footy here in 2024 alongside you. So this is gonna be a good one. We've got, obviously, Dmytro Krylak is the newest member of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Some names at the same time in Simon Betcher, possibly Richie Larea here on their way out of town. A couple re-signings, other news and notes to get into. And we're going to kind of, start off 2024 laying out some of our thoughts and expectations for how the offseason's been going, how we expect it to go. And we were talking about it right off the top here, Alex, before we actually hit record, just how quickly this thing is turning around. The Whitecaps are playing meaningful matches in just about a month's time, so it's going to come at us quickly.
Yeah, that's wild. And we'll have to get into it, of course, everything, the start of the new season, the schedule. But quickly, let's just start with, the news that kind of happened over the last month. I think to start, Sebastian Berhalter, he re-signed. That one, don't really have much to add on it, but I think it was a good piece of business, especially, gives you a little Andres Cubas insurance, gives you a little cover at different positions. So I thought that was a tidy bit of business, especially after how things started of offseason. Of course, you're always just losing players, you're kind of cutting some of the fringe of the roster, you're cutting some MLS Next Pro guys. It was nice to see a key member and a Seb Berhalter retained, right? Especially after you got the likes of a Ryan Raposo retained. Like, those are a couple names that you worried that kind of fell in that area of being good sub guys last year, but also good guys who could start. you know, at the end of the day, if you want to be a competing team, a team that competes in multiple competitions, you don't want to lose your Raposos, your Berhalters, because it's a long season. There will be injuries. You need cover at all positions, and especially when guys like Berhalter could start, and certainly I have to imagine got looks elsewhere around MLS. I thought it was good to see Berhalter retained. So I think that's a good place to start, of course, before we look into what the Whitecaps added, because of course additions mean nothing if you're subtracting all the time. So it was nice to see a net positive retain or retention, at least in the signing of Berhalter, given that he also brings still a little upside from what we've seen.
Absolutely. I mean, I think listeners will know my endorsement of Seb Berhalter. And I think it was when he wasn't announced in that initial press release of roster moves, there was at least a moderate degree of concern that, hey, maybe this is a guy that thinks, and I think rightfully so, that he might be able to really compete for a starting midfield position elsewhere in MLS. And he knows that with Andres Kubas in front of him, that opportunities might be limited in Vancouver. And hey, is this something that plays into his decision? So really nice, I think, to see him re-signed in Vancouver. He's demonstrated his positional versatility as well last season. So I think that's something, you know, Vanny loves to turn every player into someone who's positionally versatile, because that's just kind of the way the system works. But Seb showed he could do it. So yeah, as long as he's happy with the fit, I think the Whitecaps will get really good value for that. So, and yeah, if any of these Andres Kubas rumors are to be believed, then, you know, maybe they might need some cover at some point. I still think that's a lot would have to happen for the Whitecaps to let go of someone like Kubas, but it's good to know you need depth in your squad. I think at times last season, the squad depth, you know, was a concern at certain spots. Certainly with the couple of players they might be losing this offseason, I think that concern about depth only grows. But at least you know in the heart of the midfield, you've got a couple really good players you can rely on.
Yeah, exactly. Good midfields always help a lot. It's, you know, especially for a team like the Whitecaps and how they want and how they played last year and how they want to play. So, yeah, I think that was overall good signing. Not much to say. Otherwise, again, there's so much going on that I'm literally going through. I remember there's a super draft that happened quickly, just for those, you know, not familiar. The Whitecaps ended up selecting Elliot Goldthorpe, an English defender, in the second round. Of course, they gave up the first round pick. I think it was when the Sergio Cordova trade, if I'm not mistaken. So RSL got to take advantage of that pick. I don't even know if they traded it. Knowing how sometimes those things can fly around in secondary deals. And then from there, the Whitecaps ended up picking later in the draft. Just going through, they picked up Nicolas Fleuriot-Chateau, from forward from St. John's. So Canadian, he played at West Ottawa, you know, growing up. So I think that's cool to see.
The Sam Piet clone.
I'll say the long hair, even an Antoine Coupland as well. He's an Ottawa kid and he's got the long hair. So maybe they'll get along with Coupland still being around. So yeah, the Whitecaps still doing a bit of movement on the roster. Look, it might not mean much these days, especially with Next Pro, where a lot of these guys just get shuttled out there, and you know, you don't see as much, okay, guys getting drafted, getting thrust straight in the first team and either forced to sink or swim, but there's still value in the super draft. Look, Simon Betcher, they signed him. He drafted him pretty late, right? Like this is a 24-year-old, 23-year-old. And of course that leads us nicely to the next bit of news. I guess I'm here, I may as well talk about it if we're just rolling through the list. So hopefully, you know, everyone can keep up with where we're going, but Simon Betcher, drafted 2 years ago out of St. Louis. Bit of a, you know, nothing to write home about. Decent scoring rate in college. But he went out, did a job at Next Pro, signed for the first team, did a job for the first team, scored a bunch of goals this year. It is rumored by Tom Bogert, the always reliable Tom Bogert, that he's going to be heading to Denmark for $400,000. That's good pennies. You know, at $400,000, it's under the million like threshold, where that all just can be turned into TAM or JAM, and maybe that ends up helping you retain. Of course, if it's still, we'll talk into the latest in the situation, but maybe it helps you retain a Richie Lherret. Maybe it helps you get a Richie Lherret replacement. Maybe that helps you give a raise to another key player that you might want to keep, that money adds up. So all that to say, there is value in the super draft. Heck, for those who continue to doubt it, Tejon Buchanan, former super draft pick, just signed today, of course, for Italian Giants Inter Milan. So for those who do it right, there is still lots of value to take away from it. And I guess, yeah, to add to the point of the super draft, hopefully Simon Betcher ends up being one of the next pieces of the value that it can bring, both in terms of on the pitch, but also sales and other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if this does end up going through, I think Simon Betcher's will hold a unique place in Whitecaps lore, you know, going on an absolute heater there, scoring a bunch of goals and doing so at a very impressive rate. And, you know, I think he'll be missed sort of for his workhorse style and ability to just find a way to put the ball in the back of the net, even when it maybe, you know, looked a bit unorthodox at times. Ultimately, I think the move makes a lot of sense for him. It just, you know, with Brian White, it doesn't feel like there's a significant opportunity there. The Whitecaps, obviously, I think from Vanni Sartini's comments and just, you know, reading between the tea leaves, they're obviously looking for another attacking player, someone to fill that role that Sergio Cordova maybe was meant to fill. And that just would push Simon even further down the depth chart. Demir Krylak now, which we'll dive into a little bit more, but you know, he might be more of a front three player than a midfielder in his role in Vancouver. And so again, that pushes Simon down. You know, if any of these draft picks work out, they might look to bring those guys up. It's getting busy. And I think, man, if, you know, Simon has the ability to go play in a place like Denmark and earn consistent minutes and develop a successful pro career, then that's fantastic. Axel Schuster said this early on in the offseason. You know, we want all our players to do well, and sometimes we acknowledge that the moment for them to do well with us has passed, and it's time for them to go somewhere where they can succeed elsewhere. And I feel like with Simon, that's kind of where it was at, where, you know, if he's going to continue his personal progression, maybe the Whitecaps weren't the best place to do it. I did want to pick up just quickly on the draft picks. Shout out Caleb Wilkins, who wrote a really good article on this on the third sub. So I'd recommend checking that out. I think one thing just to keep in mind is that, you know, Florio Chateau scored at a super high, he's 21, he's Canadian, scored at a super high rate, you know, goals, expected goals plus assists per 90. He's just had some rough injuries, you know, didn't play for a significant period of time. And then, at, I think it's St. John's, right? That he was playing, mm-hmm. the same university that, that Tim Parker went to, and obviously a really good, college program. He wasn't even starting, when he was playing, he was coming off the bench, banging in a bunch of goals. So it's just, I think it's one of those ones where the Whitecaps scouting staff probably took a look at it here and was like, man, if some of these things we're seeing pay off in the long term, there could be a really valuable domestic striker here, but they're taking a punt on, is any of this going to pan out at the next level? So interestingly, that's the one I think I'm, you know, that late second round pick is the one I'm a bit interested to see. Also, you know, at the very least, you want good MLS Next Pro depth. And I think having Canadian guys in the system, not just those you brought through your academy, but also those you've been able to pick up along the way, a la Ryan Raposo, those are always really good players to have.
Yeah, and Levante Johnson. So again, the value continues to pay off from the super draft. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the new picks. And lastly, I guess on Betcher, it's a win-win move. And sometimes those are good because Betcher, look, there's no doubt if you give him minutes and a chance to do something, he can score goals. He's shown it. But you have Brian White, who can also score goals and is proven at that MLS level, right? And, you know, if you're also looking potentially at DP strikers, all of a sudden those are guys getting in the way of Betcher. So the fact that Betcher scored, showed that he can score goals when given opportunities, that nets the Whitecaps a 400K fee because strikers are always going to be valuable. You know, that's the Soccernomics 101, isn't it? And then for Betcher, it's a chance now. Yeah, Denmark, it's a nice place to live, a good top league, a chance to go continue as a footballer. That's a win-win. And sometimes it's important to shout out win-wins where, you know, one team, the team gets some a good money and a chance to to find someone that maybe fits what they need from that, say, second or even third striker position, as Betcher might end up filling or would have ended up filling based on potential signings. And then also for Betcher to, you know, get a chance to maybe flourish, right? Go to a new league, new environment. And who knows? He seems like someone where, okay, maybe he won't, might not start day one in Denmark, but you give him a chance. He's shown it. He can put the ball in the net, and that's always going to be valuable. But otherwise, kind of going through the list of news here, let's just talk about Demir Krylak. You know, as that was a huge signing in terms of MLS reputation. Okay, maybe it's not one where this isn't the Demir Krylak you're getting a few years ago where, look, he's had a heck of a career. Like, I, for me, I think of Krylak, I think of just the amount of goals he scored against the Whitecaps. I think of 2021, I think it was, where RSL, they were awful first half of the season. He puts them on their back. He scores the winning goal. What was it, like the 91st minute of decision day to send them to the playoffs? And then they went on a decent little run in the playoffs. Like, Demir Krylak's a tank. Like, he was someone who was...
All I know is that season, he absolutely carried my MLS fantasy team. Would have been nothing without him. It was like captain that man every week.
He was a fantasy god. Again, 2021, by the way, I'm looking here. He scored 16 goals in 33 MLS games. Like, that is very, very impressive for, at the time, he was like 32 playing on a team like RSL. So yeah, certainly one with name recognition around MLS. But what's nice is that at RSL over the last few years, he's been asked to be the guy there, especially after Rusnak left to go to Seattle. Krylak was Mr. Everything, and he did a good job of it. Like, heck, even last year, he came coming off a major injury where he played only 5 games in 2022, right? He was able to get 8 goals and 1 assist last year across all competitions, 4 goals in 5 U.S. Open Cup games, 4 goals and 1 assist in 27 MLS games. He played around 1,600 minutes. That's very impressive total on for his age, 34, on an RSL team. That, to their credit, I was really bullish on them last year. They did some good improvements, and he still showed that he can hang. But what's nice is that he's coming to Vancouver not to be that guy anymore. He's going to be more of a super or like a complimentary piece. Maybe he'll start games. Maybe he'll come off the bench. But you're not looking at him because you have Ryan Gold. Heck, if Ryan Gold isn't capacitated, you have Pedro Vite. Also, you could argue that guys like Ali Ahmed, this is, you know, more of their team at the moment. I'm just talking like from the attack perspective without going into the likes of Kubas, of course, Adekugbe, et cetera, across the board. So that's going to be nice for Krylak because he's not going to be the guy like he is in RSL. And I think that's ultimately good depth for the Whitecaps because we mentioned they need all attacking depth. That was a reason why, at least personally, I said I'd be in favor of bringing back a Hoilett at the right price. Again, I felt more, if Hoilett leaves and it feels like it's more and more likely, it feels like Hoilett, again, it feels like he has a bigger role to play somewhere else. But if you could convince a Hoilett to stay, great. And I think it's nice that already, before we even know it, which happens with Hoilett, which could be an added bonus, you got a guy in Krylak that you have to imagine they got at a good pay cut, because it wouldn't make sense to bring someone like him in on like 600 or 500, or I think he was on 400K or whatever it was last year. And he showed that he can still produce. Like, look, he's not going to, I'd say next year, don't expect a 10 goal, 5 assist season. Don't even expect a 5 goal, 5 assist. But as the numbers show, he can still progress the ball at a very good rate. He can get the ball up the field. And that's intriguing to imagine, because one thing we did see last year on the Whitecaps, Ryan Gold and Brian White can be very dangerous when they get the ball. Ryan Gold, no doubt about that. Even White, you get him chances. And a guy like Krylak, what is nice is that the underlying numbers suggest that, okay, yeah, he's not 2021 Demir Krylak going to score you 16 goals. But even last year, despite coming off an injury, despite everything, he was in the top 5% among attackers at just getting the ball up to those in front of him. And that might seem like a small thing, but that's not an easy thing to do for all attackers.
Yeah, you hit on so many good points. I think the other thing for me too is that it depends. This is all a bit contingent on if the Whitecaps add another attacker, who that attacker is. But suppose that you're playing with Brian White and Ryan Gold up front. I think something the Whitecaps are really lacking this season at times, especially late in games when they were searching for a goal, is that third player arriving in the box. as an option to make a final pass or as an option to be a clinical finisher. And I think in limited minutes, there's potential for Krylak to do both those things. Like, he's, you know, as you said, 16 goals in 2021. I think a lot of people think the kind of, you know, prototypical advanced midfielder making those final passes, but he is a shooter, loves to shoot, and, you know, obviously has the technique to back that up as well. So I think just, you know, kind of in a way what the Whitecaps were maybe hoping for out of Alessandro Schopf, that midfield player who can be that late box arriver and then provide a final product, some clinical finishing. As you said, I think it's just, it's all contingent on understanding that this is not the Demir Krylak of reputations past. This is a 35-year-old, and that's fine. If the value is right, which I think it will be, obviously we have to, it's MLS, so we have to wait and see. But yeah, if he can, he doesn't actually have to have 5 goals and 5 assists for Vancouver, but if he has that kind of feel and that kind of impact as a guy that can come on late in matches and help them find that critical goal to save points. I mean, we talk about this at the end of the regular season, right? Where you look back on certain results where, man, they, you know, they turned 3 points into one in Vancouver. If you have someone like Krylak who can just flip a result or two, all of a sudden you don't have to play LAFC in the first round of the playoffs, right? And those are the margins that make a difference turning from a, you know, a good playoff team into something closer to a contender. I don't, this move alone doesn't give you that step, but I think it's a nice ingredient to have. And yeah, with Betra out the door, I do wonder initially when I saw this Krylak move, I was like, oh, well, they're moving on from Junior Hoilett. This seems like an obvious replacement. Now that Betra's gone, I don't know if the value's right. Maybe you bring both of them back into the fold. That could be interesting. And, you know, I think for a team in this window where all their prime age players are kind of, you know, those 27, 28-year-olds are the core of the squad, having some veteran leadership, you know, some guys that have been there and done it in a bunch of different leagues who maybe can, you know, can score that crucial goal in a moment you need it. I don't think that's a bad ingredient to have. So, yeah, overall, I think optimistic. It's going to be weird to see Krylak and,
it's so weird.
The Vancouver Whitecaps, the Vancouver Whitecaps hoop. That's going to be very, very strange. I know no RSL fans not particularly pleased about that. Even not like there's some huge rivalry between RSL and the Whitecaps, but you know, I don't think those two sides love each other. So yeah, it's going to be very strange, but looking forward to it at the same time.
Yeah, and I love the Hoilett Krylak point, because I think one thing is clear with Hoilett and Krylak, there's still quality there. I think that's a big thing. But with Hoilett, it was like, okay, is there 2,000-minute quality? Is there 2,500? Is there 90s every week quality? Ditto with Krylak. But what's nice, if you can almost think of it as an aggregate player, right? Maybe if you get 1,300 good minutes out of Hoilett and 1,300 good minutes out of Krylak, all of a sudden you've got a good player in the aggregate there, right? Especially if they can offset each other. Maybe they trade starts. Maybe they trade, you know, one starts, the other comes on, vice versa. Of course, we have to see if Hoilett comes back, but there is that potential there. And sometimes that's it can make as much sense to do that versus just, you know, riding guys like Gold and White and asking them to play 3,000 and give you a good 3,000. Sometimes that isn't always realistic. And if you can get good 1,300s from a few guys around the top end of your attacking lineup, that makes the difference. Like that's what I think of like CF Montreal 2022, right? Where they had a Kyoto who carried a lot of the load that year and a Mihailovic, but then they got contributions from everywhere else. And that just adds up. That helps you score over the point in time. And of course you want guys like Gold to in the playoff game, and when it comes down to it, you want him to be the guy stepping up. But sometimes to get to the playoff game and to get the seeding, as we saw, everyone runs hot and cold. Lionel Messi runs hot and cold. Ryan Gold certainly is going to run hot and cold. In those games where he's cold, it is nice to be able to look down a bench and see, okay, maybe you have a Krylak or maybe you have a Hoilett to turn to as options. Because I think ultimately, it might not win you a playoff game, or maybe it will, but over the that course of a season, if used right, there can be some value there. So, yeah, I think the big thing really about this Krylak edition, will just be make sure that he gets used in the right role. Because I think, of course, if we're sitting here in 12 months' time and he played 3,000 minutes and he burned out and he struggled to keep up with the pace that the Whitecaps want to play, and maybe he gets paid a little more, it's awful signing. But I think at the based on what we know and what we've seen and what we expect, that doesn't look to be the case. Even heck, Hoilett was a good example where Hoilett was eased in. He showed that, okay, maybe actually there is a bit more juice than they expect already with Hoilett. He got heavy minutes, but also at the same time, his minutes were like relatively managed. And I think that looks like that'll be the case with Krylak. So at the very least, it sounds like he should be used right. And in terms of the salary, yeah, we'll see in MLS, right? The nice thing is it'll be in 4 months. So we'll have a good idea of what his role looks like and what his salary is. And maybe we'll reopen this discussion either more positively because he'll be like on 100K, or maybe more negatively because who knows, maybe he ends up on 600K.
Well, one of the players that we talked a lot about what the value of their contract might be heading into 2024 was Richie Larea. And there had not been much news on the Richie front up until today. I mean, there's still nothing substantive, but JJ Adams reporting that, you know, things seem to be progressing in a direction where Richie Larea may not be back in Vancouver for the 2024 season. Alex, you were saying that, you know, it sounds like things are just still very much up in the air. And that's kind of been the theme since Richie joined the Whitecaps, where he, you know, he liked the move to Vancouver. He was playing there, but he was open about the future. And there didn't seem to be a lot of real definitive movements one way or another. So, I mean, I guess your thoughts on, you know, the potential of Richie not being with the Whitecaps in 2024 and what that means for the squad if it does happen. Because obviously, you know, we've had discussions about this already. From the moment he was brought into Vancouver, this was on the radar as an impending decision down the line. But it's interesting that perhaps now it is leaning in the direction that he won't come back.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, even with the reports from JJ Adams, it just kind of tells you where things have already been, right? Like, it's just, it's hard. I think the big thing is it's hard to really get a read on what's going to happen on the Richie Larea situation, because for word, this is what JJ tweeted today. And the thing is with JJ, you 100% know that he got this from a good spot, a good source, good sources. But he's tweeted, it's not completely over yet, but it appears Richie Larea's time with the Whitecaps is coming to an end. He still has 18 months left on his Forest contract. June 2025 is when that ends, but he don't know if he'll be heading back overseas or staying in MLS. And look, I think it's something where the way I read this, and again, it's completely up to interpretation, this could also, you know, could be from the Whitecaps' perspective. This could also be them just being like, look, would love to have Richie Larea. Their first competitive game is in 4 weeks. Their first MLS game is in 8 weeks. They have a preseason that starts next week. Like, it's something where if things aren't progressing, it can make as much sense for them to just be like, all right, screw it. Love to have Larea back. But the big vibe that I seem to see here is that between Forest and between Larea, there's not much clarity, because I'm sure the hard part Forest is in, they kind of want to keep an asset like Larea, because I understand you go down the championship, they've got a lot of bloated salaries, a lot of players would have to be offloaded, but then it looks like they're going to survive because this crop of relegation candidates is historically bad. But then again, they're not so sure. So it's almost like you want to, like, basically they want to put it that I'd imagine that the deal is structured in their favor. But then that just ends up hurting options for Larea, because the guy, like, yeah, okay, let's be real. He's on Premier, like, he has a Premier League salary, a Premier League contract. It's probably pretty solid. I have no idea what the actual financials are, but based on what we've seen with his loans to TFC and the Whitecaps and the salary he's made, it's good money. So he's kind of caught in a situation where if maybe Nottingham only wants to loan him to retain that possibility, then it ends up limiting his suitors in an MLS, right? Because there's the salary caps, there's finances, but then a team like the Whitecaps wants to offer him good money, but maybe not what he's quite making at Forest money. But then they're like, all right, pay up. But he's kind of at a point where teams might not be willing to pay X amount of million and pay him X amount per year for a fullback. it kind of leaves him in an awkward limbo. So I think the kind of vibe I also get is that it also seems from the Whitecaps, it feels like they've done what they can do. And they're kind of just like, look, you know the number, you know what to call when, you know, you figure out if, all right, maybe Europe's a better option for him if they want to hold on for the 6 months. Because I think as well, it's important to notice it's so awkward with like this Premier League schedule or like the Europeans calendar or the summer calendar versus, you know, MLS. Because you end up loaning him to a team in MLS, they'll want him for the year. Like, you don't want him till just June. You want him for the year, because then you end up what happening with TFC, where they had him and they had to get rid of him in June. He ends up with a rival at the end of the day. Yes, they're not in the same conference, but it's a rival. So an MLS team will want him for the whole year. Like the Whitecaps, you don't want him till just June. Like, you know, you want him for a Champions League run, cool. Like, maybe a couple Voyagers Cup games, great. But then for Forrest, if the best suitors for him are in MLS versus a Europe, where it might more, make more sense. Again, all of that to say, you're just caught in this endless circle of a limbo. And the way I read this is the Whitecaps just kind of being like, all right, we know what we did. For their sake, it's smart to look elsewhere. And I would, I feel like right now the ball is very much in Forrest's court, so that if in 3 weeks Richie Larrea is a Whitecaps player, that's kind of the vibe I get. It would be because Forrest kind of realizing what the chips in front of them ended up playing out as.
Yeah, I like that read of the situation where, you know, obviously, I think, you know, yeah, as you said, JJ's getting this from a good source, you know, which in air quotes is, you know, some either someone very closely related to the club or the club itself. So I think, you know, the club is saying at this point, okay, Nottingham, Richie, figure it out. This is our offer. You know, if you want to be here, if the club in Nottingham wants to offload Richie, this is on the table, but we're not going to force your hand. We're not going to make you do it. And yeah, if they've kind of reached their point of no return in terms of salary, in terms of where he's going to fit into the, all the permutations of the roster in MLS, then, you know, there's nothing more they could do. So, we'll have to see how it progresses. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's not over. I think that, I don't know, if I was Richie, I would be attracted to the system fit, the fact that you get to play for a contender for MLS Cup. I mean, there's certainly in the conversation, maybe not the top two or three teams, but they're, you know, in that group just behind. And I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons as a player why it would be attractive. It's just a question of does something different come along and enough to distract you or sway you away? But Alex, we were talking about this before the show. I mean, within MLS, it's hard to imagine that there's a much better fit than Vancouver in terms of, you know, it's in Canada. The Whitecaps clearly, you know, made their intent clear that they weren't trying to lowball Richie. They were going to offer him a competitive contract for MLS standards. And as I mentioned, the system fit, the, you know, a team near the top of the table, I think it would be hard to find a much better spot than that in MLS. So we're just going to have to see how it progresses here. But man, kind of like, you know, some of the possible acquisitions they could make, the timeline is accelerating here rapidly. And we can maybe talk about it when we get to Champions Cup a little bit, but it's just, it's interesting how it feels like the season starts a month away from now. And yet the first MLS match isn't until the 2nd of March. So it's going to be a bit chaotic. For better or worse, you know, the Whitecaps are not going to have a perfect start to this season, not only because of how quickly things get going, but also, hey, they're going to be without Vanni Sartini for a significant period of the opening MLS schedule. So which is something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, exactly. So many moving parts. And yeah, I think the MLS thing is the big thing, I think, as well in this deal with Larrea, because no doubt other teams are interested. You'd be foolish not to. He's one of the best fullbacks in MLS when he's playing. He's been one of the best fullbacks in MLS. Like, you think immediately, like, Columbus, if Mo Farsi leaves, Julian Gressel left to go to Miami, I'm sure Columbus would love a Richie Larrea. I'm sure, and that's just off the top of my head, right? Like, a team like that, the only question is, okay, teams like Columbus, they've got Diego Rossi's, they've got Cucho Hernandez's, they've got a little maybe less to offer in terms of the Whitecaps being like, look, again, I Will he be a new DP? Probably not with the fourth DP rule not looking like it'll happen, or in fact getting outright rejected, I think, as it was. There's a still chance that he would be a very high TAM player. He would be a centerpiece on the Whitecaps. It's something where a lot of teams that can offer that are either going to be teams like Columbus, where they might have to offer a little less just because of the numbers, or teams where, yeah, they can offer him that, but they might not be a contender. They might be a team that has a little more holes, and then you kind of end up on a TFC 2.0 situation. So again, well, no idea where he could end up. It's hard to read, right? For all we know, he ends up somewhere else in MLS. My vibe from all this is just, it feels like in a month or 2 months, he'll either be a Whitecaps player or he'll be somewhere in Europe, but it's hard to imagine him being somewhere else in MLS. But look, if he ends up in MLS, we'll be curious to see what ended up transpiring there. And again, that's not me saying like, oh, the Whitecaps have the inside track. I just feel like based on all the factors we know, that just seems the likeliest of scenarios. But hey, we'll look to see if how all of this ends up aging as the Whitecaps continue to finalize their roster. But it shows that they need to figure this stuff out quickly, because for all of the job they've done of retaining their entire roster, Berhalter now, Raposo now, like the fact that this Larrey and Hoilett stuff kind of is still hanging around, you want to get that as soon as the way, because you need to be bringing in more guys like Krylak, right? The new signings, guys filling positions of need. You need that striker. You need that center back. Maybe you need some midfield depth. Maybe some more fullback depth. Maybe goalkeeper options. It would be nice to do all of that while also having some clarity on guys that were already there. Because look, if Richie Larea leaves, it's not the end of the world. I think that's important to say. Like, yeah, they're losing a very good player, but it's someone where you can replace it. But it'd be nice to know, okay, do they have to look for a new, you know, potentially high level wing back, fullback, while also looking for a new striker, a new center back? And that's where it all adds up. But yeah, Sam, I'd say Richie Larea, we'll wait and see, right?
It's definitely one to put a bookmark in, and yeah, I think see how the next month goes. A lot could change. I feel like all it takes, right, is a couple phone calls, and all of a sudden this thing goes from 0 to 100 really quick. But at the moment, it just seems like no one's really doing anything. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll check back in with you soon. All right. Moving a little bit to the unsubstantiated or the early stage rumors portion of the podcast. We had, you know, some interesting quotes from Vanni Sartini about Ali Ahmed and his potential as a player to move to Europe. And then, you know, some talk about some Portuguese teams interested. I thought that was interesting. You just put this in the notes. I almost forgot about this because it's been a while, but those Ryan Gauld quotes from, I think that was a Scottish publication, was it not? Just, you know, him very matter-of-factly saying, well, you know, I'm under contract for another season with my current club, and that sure, you know, Europe or anywhere else would be an interest after that. So that certainly, I think, maybe opened some eyes a little bit. Also, Pedro Vite was asked about some potential moves, but Pedro pretty succinctly shut those down. And then Andres Cubas was the last one where it seemed like there was some stirring in Argentina about him returning to play for Boca, I believe, right? So all kinds of swirlings and possible hints and moves. But I think, I don't know, Alex, where's your, you know, obviously the Ali Ahmed one was more of it's a promising player that I think teams are keeping their eye out for. That's not shocking at all. That's kind of a water is wet news point, right? Obviously teams have seen what Ali's done, the steps he's taken, his progression, not only for the Whitecaps, but also the national team. Who wouldn't be keeping tabs on a player like that? The Gauld quotes, I feel like, having heard from Ryan enough in media, he's just often very like matter of fact about issues like that. And so I don't know. I don't read too much into that. I think that, you know, Ryan Gauld obviously has had a ton of success with Vancouver and seems reasonably happy. And hey, he's under contract for another season. So, I think that's one you probably punt down the road for now and don't worry about too much. The interesting one was, I know the Argentinian media can probably stir up something out of nothing, but just to hear Andres Kubas's name in some rumors was a curious one, because I don't know about you, Alex, but I would have to think that if I'm Axel Schuster in the Vancouver Whitecaps, it would take a lot for me to be interested in moving that player, and even if Andres is banging on the table saying he wants a move, whichever club is interested, you'd have to make sure that it was really worth your while.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think I read the situation in three levels. I think all these situations, I think, again, we can just roll through them all in one go. Kubas, no worry. Again, he's locked up on a long-term deal. Of course, he's going to attract interest. He's one of the best defensive midfielders in MLS. He's an international in CONMEBOL for a team that, look, has a legit chance of making a World Cup in 2026 in Paraguay. Just with how the spots are allocated and how the format works there. Like, of course, they'll attract interest from South America. I'm sure they'll attract interest from Europe. The only question is, are the Whitecaps going to sell before then? And the answer is probably not. The thing is, who knows? Like, again, there's no bridge too small. I'm sure maybe if a team comes and offers 15 million, right? Like, all of a sudden it's a different story, right? Like, okay, does the guy like Andres Kubas worth that much? But look, he's signed till the end of 2026, like signed, and has a club option for 2027. That one feels like one where either the Whitecaps are going to net a healthy fee, or he's going to be a Whitecap till at least 2026. And I think if he ends up staying that long, that'll have been a deal that, even if they lose him for free, will have been very worth it and one of the best they've made in club history. And look, if they do get 10, 15 million for them, it could be something where it makes sense, because I think if they're taking that move, it means they have a good replacement lined up, or Seb Berhalter's turned into an MLS monster or something like that. So the Kubas one, I just thought was like, of course, like, it's just the nature of the game. Like, you're not going to be hearing, oh, Boca Juniors is interested in the Whitecaps' third goalkeeper. No, they're going to be interested in the likes of Kubas. Maybe, you're going to hear rumors about Ryan Gold. Like, they're good players. But to that point, I think the Gold one is a bit more worrying, just because his contract is up at the end of this year, at least in terms of the guaranteed portion. I think, of course, the Whitecaps have a club option, if I'm not mistaken, or I don't even know if they do. But basically, the guaranteed portion is up in 2024. So there is a legit possibility for negotiations. And that's where it's a bit more worrying, just because that means, of course, you have him for this year. But then if you lose him, you've signed it, just again, based on the fact of how long Adekugbe signed, Takaoka signed, Kubas re-signed, White re-signed, like, the window for this team very much appears between now and 2026. Heck, even guys like Pedro Vite, not sure how long he's signed, but again, I think most of their key guys were on that trajectory. Losing the centerpiece, because look, all the other guys are very key. And again, not to say if Gold left, there's guys who wouldn't be able to step up. But look, he's the centerpiece to this project. It is a bit worrying that he's heading into the last year of his contract, and he hasn't, just because a lot of those other guys, like Kubas, got signed like right away, right? He wasn't in the last year they got that deal done. White as well, like, they got that deal done. So I'm a bit more worried, just because it hasn't been that quick. But also from his perspective, it makes sense. Like, Ryan Gold will be a valuable commodity if he was a free agent. Teams in Europe and in MLS would throw a lot of money at him. Like, it makes sense for him to take it slow. But for the Whitecaps, personally, the way I read that situation immediately is, look, if you're the Whitecaps, throw $6 million at Ryan Gold. Genuinely, like, he's proven to be that valuable. And if he declines that and decides to go elsewhere, at least, okay, we offered him a chance to make him, to pay him like a marquee MLS player, like he is. He's already a DP. It's not like you're giving a raise to someone on 400K and making them a DP. No, he's already a DP. Just offer him whatever you can feel comfortable. It's $6-7 million, depending on how things go. And if he goes elsewhere, that's just, the nature of the game. And at least you'll know that, okay, we offered $5-7 million to a Gold. Maybe we can get that to find his replacement. So that's just kind of how I read it with Gold. It feels like one where, if you're Gauld, why corner yourself into potentially taking less money with the Whitecaps, especially knowing that the Whitecaps, if you're the Whitecaps, you have every reason to give Gauld that money. He's been so key. He's really revitalized the club. He's like an MLS All-Star MVP level, you know, player. So yeah, for those unfamiliar, the quote was, "Let's see, I'm in the last year and we haven't spoken yet. I like the club and the city, but it depends on what they want and offer. And but also I enjoyed playing in Europe and will listen whoever wants to talk to me and decide." Why wouldn't he? If he's a free agent, you're not going to just be like, "I want Whitecaps only." That's how you end up with a $2 million deal. That's how you end up with a $3 million deal. He said it. Look, I like the city. I will see what they offer. But if a European club comes and says something, he won't say no. So that's kind of how I feel about Gauld. Whitecaps offer him the money, see what goes. As for Ali Ahmed, I think it's just no surprise. Look, he's a talented young player, and he makes a lot of sense for European teams because he might cost $4 or $5 million, which will be a bargain versus, you know, maybe you go get an equivalent talent in Brazil or something like that. It might cost you $10-15 million. So it's someone who's broken in. He's a national team level player now. As we've seen, he's broken in that Canmt fold. He's been very good in MLS. It feels like he's primed for a breakout year. Teams are going to be interested, and hopefully he can make the most of this potential. And sometime over the next few years, we'll be talking about him having had a very good Whitecaps career and hopefully ending up at a top club that can advance his Canmt and his own career.
Yeah, just to pick up on the Gauld discussion and kind of finish that off. Yeah, I think that was my perspective on that quote was, as you, I think, very well outlined, it's just, why back yourself into a corner? You know, just speaking very factually, like, yes, we're in the early stage of contract negotiations, or there haven't even been talks yet. I'm open to all options. And yeah, the closer he walks himself to that, to being out of contract, the more desperate the Whitecaps are going to be to sign him. So you just continue to increase your value the longer you wait. So at this point, you know, if you don't have that extension wrapped up, why wouldn't you do that if they're Gauld? I guess, yeah, you can ask the question why the Whitecaps haven't been able to get something signed to this point. But, you know, that depends on who you're dealing with from an agent perspective and how they operate, how they try to get the most for their clients. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, realistically, I think that, to me, I guess maybe it reveals my framing of this team a little bit. To me, I think it's like all in on 2024, and anything beyond that is kind of like a tomorrow problem. So I'm viewing this whole offseason, really this whole season upcoming, through like ships into the middle of the table. We are trying to win MLS Cup this season, because I think beyond that, some of these players get older. They're under, you know, they're being well compensated. They're not necessarily as good value as they were before. I feel like that no window is going to be as good as the one that presents itself in 2024. So, anything beyond that, I think, is kind of wait and see at this point. So, you know, the Whitecaps owe it to do everything they can to put together as competitive a squad as they can this season.
100%. And I think it makes sense. All their key pieces are there. And again, it makes sense for how the Larea situation has been handled, as in, right? Like, it's something where, okay, maybe if they knew they would, like, you know, longer term, that they'd want him for 2, 3, 4 years, maybe they would be a bit more patient, knowing, okay, yeah, maybe we might have to negotiate it deep into preseason or the start of the season to make sure we get the guy, where they're kind of like, all right, things are being complicated. We're going to start looking at another option that can help bolster us right now. That feels like the kind of mindset. And yeah, it makes sense, because look, the reality is, heading into the next offseason, you could be without Gauld, just straight up, because if he lets his contract expire and leave, as any player under contract can do, that could happen. Pedro Vite, it feels like this is the last year. And again, not a bad thing. It feels like he'll get a good fee from somewhere in Europe, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 mil, depending on how good of a year he has. That's good. You take that money, you reinvest. Feels like Ali Ahmed's starting to push into that way where you could very well be without him by the end of the year because he got a good move to go elsewhere. And then there's maybe some other guys who end up, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, okay, guys like Adekugbe and White and Kubas are there long term and you can build around them. But you know, you're like surely between the likes of a Veselinovic, a Blackman, some of these other names, like if Schopf is still back, like it feels like you're talking Raposo's contracts up. Like it feels like a couple of guys might be gone. Then you're heading into next year, not rebuilding, because again, you still have a core of Kubas, that it could be White. Like that's still pieces. But all of a sudden, if you're replacing a Gold, it's possible because they'll have a DP spot open and, you know, they showed they're willing to pay a couple million for one. But it's like you mentioned, like you're not all in on it. You're going to have to restart and start building a different version of a different team. So yeah, it really shows the importance of maybe going all in this year to maximize the Gold window. And look, maybe hopefully A, you're successful in it, but B, from there, hopefully you're able to retain a Gold and then run it back in 2025. But without that guarantee, why potentially hedge on the future if the key piece to it all is no longer there, right?
Yeah, I think it's just all, everything should be framed under the philosophy and the perspective of how do we make ourselves the best possible team in 2024. So yeah, we'll see how they operate over the next couple months and if that is reflected in their decision making. All right, well, speaking of the next couple of months, Alex, we haven't actually had a chat about this on the show because it's been a while, but the Champions Cup draw was announced. And, you know, as much as the name change was something we could have a little bit of fun with, this one probably takes the cake by a significant margin. It's really, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation. This is a scenario where I do actually, we take our fair few shots at the Vancouver Whitecaps on this podcast as an organization, but this one's tough where, you know, you win your second consecutive Canadian championship, you get a great opportunity to play in the Champions Cup, and now you're having to host your, could be your only hosting Champions Cup match of the season at Starlight Stadium on Vancouver Island because, you know, stop me if you've heard this before, BC Place had a scheduling conflict with some sort of event,
the Home and Gardening
conference,
Show.
The Home and Gardening Show, which I'm slightly embarrassed to admit, I think I have been to once. I cannot remember why, but I'm pretty sure I've been there. Shout out to the boat show. That one's always entertaining.
Oh, that's class.
I do genuinely enjoy the boat show. And you know, I like a good bit of gardening, but I don't know if I'd go to BC Place for the Home and Garden Show. But anyways, that is the reason why the Whitecaps have to play on Vancouver Island, in addition to the fact that due to lighting and stadium restrictions, places like Willoughby and Swangard are not admissible for this kind of event. So not only was it a really tough draw for the Whitecaps in the sense that they got freaking Tigris as their first round matchup, but they also have to essentially play two road matches. And they're doing this all before the regular season actually starts. So it's going to be an uphill battle. I was telling Alex before the show, my perspective on this, you know, listeners out there, let us know what you think. And Alex, you know, I'd encourage you to share your perspective as well. But to me, this just signals, hey, this competition, it just might not be for us this season. This is one where you treat it like preseason because it is preseason. And hey, if you manage to secure a glorious upset result, it'll be really memorable. It'll be fun. And okay, maybe then you throw more into this competition. But at the moment, given Mission 2024 trying to win MLS Cup, I can't see how it would benefit this side to get distracted or to mess up their season preparations by focusing too much on this competition, basically, is what I'm thinking at this point.
It just sucks. I think it is the big worst case scenario for the Whitecaps. Like, pretty much, like, considering they were in pot two, again, like, this close from being in pot one. I'm just looking at it now. There were 8 ranking points off being in pot one, which just significantly changes the caliber of team as well, because they would add a chance to play some of the Costa Rican teams, for example, which aren't what they used to be. You know, Guatemalan Comunicaciones. I don't know why that struck. Comunicaciones, sorry. Independiente from Panama. Real Esteli from El Salvador, Mocha from the Dominican Republic, which is very lit, by the way, Cavalier from Jamaica, or St. Louis City. Like, those are teams you much rather would have faced. So first off, they missed pot one by like just a bit. That meant they had to draw either the likes of Club America, Monte Rey, Tigres, Philadelphia, Toluca, Guadalajara, Orlando, Nashville, Cincy, New York, New England, or Houston, which is a much tougher crop. But also of those names, pretty much for me, the top three teams to want to avoid are pretty much like it's Tigres, it's probably Monterrey, and then you could argue it's likely either right now based on what we know, Cincy, just based on the signings in their squad, or you could argue like at Club America. So like that's pretty much because I think Club America just ended up winning the Mexican League. Sorry, I don't know why I was struggling to say that. So Club America is back in form, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, they did. So all that said, that's bottom three worst draw you want. So that's tick one. After the pot two, actually, which was tick zero, you can say it kind of set the table for this. Then tick three is you got the terrible scheduling. You get the round one where you have to play between February 6 and 8, leg one, and then leg two on February 13 and 15. For context, the other leg, like the other set of games, they play their first leg two of the first set of teams because they've had to stagger because there's so many games and whatnot. So basically you lose 2 weeks of what could have been preseason, friendlies, chance to get guys healthy. Because, you know, the Whitecaps did enter the offseason with a few niggling injuries, which with how short the offseason is might persist, might bleed into to start of this. And it just ruins preseason time because the earliest they could start was like January 7th. So they lose that. So that's tick three. And then, yeah, it's just the fact that you don't get your own stadium. So not only are you playing a giant like Tigres, you lose the home advantage of, okay, at least maybe you have one game where you try to throttle them and you head into leg two and you just hang on for dear life. Now you're on a Starlight Stadium pitch. That's not going to benefit the Whitecaps. It's narrower. It's tighter. You don't want to be playing a team like Tigres on there. It feels like they're going to thrive, especially with guys like Gignac. You know, less running for him. He's going to be loving it. More chances to just whip crosses onto his head and, you know, score goals as he's done in the previous two times he's played the previous three times he's played the Whitecaps. It's great. So really, yeah, this is just a nightmare scenario. Not to say anything would have been better, but look, Chivas hasn't been the same Chivas that they used to be. Chivas would have been better on the team front of Toluca. Heck, you know, you back the Whitecaps against another MLS team. Especially the likes of, you know, Nashville, Orlando, Philly. You know what? Like the Whitecaps could go toe to toe with those guys. New England, especially new coach in New England. Like those are teams you would have liked. And then yeah, the scheduling. So it is a good point, just because I think it's something where the way I view it, don't risk anything in this tie. All that to say is if there's guys that are 90%, maybe they have a little knee knock. Maybe they have something where normally they could play. Why would you, you know, risk them potentially getting injured for 2-3 months? That derails the start of your season, which has been an issue for the last few years, starting strong and getting points on the board. Because mathematically, the more points you get in the first 2-3 months, that usually sets you up for the rest of the season instead of having to play catch up. I'm not saying they go out and fold in the towel and play an MLS Next Pro team against Tigres and embarrass themselves. But basically err on the side of caution. And yeah, if you get a win, great, because Tigres will also be in early season form-ish just because of this, you know, the fact that their last season just ended and then they're going to start the, I think it's Apertura is about to start or the Clausura. I'm not exactly sure which one. But yeah, it's really just such a bad case scenario, Whitecaps in each case.
The thing that it's been so long now that I almost sort of forgot about this, but the insult to injury of this as well is that it's because it's, I want to say Champions League so freaking badly. I'm really trying not to, but Champions Cup is that it's midweek and the match is late. So logistically, both in terms of people leaving work to get over to the island to go support the squad, getting back that night, you know, people are saying I'm not going to be able to make the last ferry to get back. Like it's just, it's a nightmare on that front as well, which is tough. You know, I do think it's cool in a vacuum or in different scenario, this little Tigres-Vancouver Whitecaps rivalry, especially if the Whitecaps could win one of these ties, I think it would be quite fun that, you know, there's a bit of history there. There's a bit of animosity, you know, with the goalkeeper shenanigans and all that stuff. Like there is some good juice behind this matchup. It's just a shame they don't get to do it at BC Place. A shame it'll be in front of, you know, fewer supporters than it could be. I'm sure, though, you know, I will say it's a great opportunity for those on the island to check out this match. And there's a good section of Vancouver Whitecaps supporters over there. So I think it's a nice opportunity for them at what is a tremendous venue. Like a Starlight is fantastic. So I'm sure they'll knock it out of the park in terms of hosting. But yeah, shame on a couple fronts there, but also some silver linings out of it, I think. So that's going to be interesting. Obviously, Alex, as we dive into the actual preseason and get closer to this match, we'll have more thoughts on the matchup itself and what it's going to look like. But we just wanted to at least acknowledge and kind of tee up what's to come on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's not to say they can't make a run, so we'll see. Hopefully they can surprise, but hey, maybe that just changes the priority. Maybe you get a better start in MLS if you approach it the right way. And who knows, maybe it makes you want to go more all in for League's Cup, especially if you get a more favorable draw in League's Cup. Because look, hate it or love it, you do. There's a chance to qualify for continental competition, which, hey, of course the Whitecaps will look to get back via the Canadian Championship, but look, there'll be a TFC under John Herdman who I bet that they're going to really prioritize the Canadian Championship as a chance to be like a stepping stone. And you know Montreal is going to want to bounce back, especially new coach, some new roster. So it is nice to know that, okay, if you make a run in League's Cup, it's not like before where it's Canadian Championship or literally bust, because you can be like, you know, you can win an MLS Cup and still not get into the CONCACAF Champions Cup. But yeah, anyways, we'll see. Again, it's not writing it off. This Tigres team is a bit weird. They made it to the final of the Liga MX Apertura. It is the Apertura. They just start the Clausura after about a month break in a week and a half. But yeah, they showed against America that, okay, maybe this Tigres team, they showed it as well in League's Cup. Like, it's very juggernaut, but also there's some flaws. To be fair, they've been, you know, they've been pushing for a lot of big signings. It's been fascinating window for like Liga MX, for example. I know it's not Tigres, but like Brandon Vasquez might head to Monterrey, Cade Cowell might head to Chivas. Like Liga MX is, a lot of these teams are pushing. I know Tigres has been trying to make some big signings. So yeah, definitely such an intriguing matchup because of all that things. And yeah, it was so funny just going through the draw and just seeing all the options, and you're like, oh well, joking, it was near the end too, like, well, Whitecaps are going to get Tigres, aren't they? And then sure enough, it happened. You can only help yourself but laugh at all of it.
All right, well, one thing we've hinted at throughout the show so far but not really maybe had a full dive into is the spots that are still on the Whitecaps wish list. Other than Demir Krylak, there have been no substantive additions to the squad. That's somewhat to be expected, where really up until recently only MLS or free agent or, you know, other North American signings would have been on the cards. But, you know, we're a month away from Champions Cup. We're 2 months away from the start of the MLS regular season. So there's no time like the present. And it seems, Alex, like there's, let's just, in this hypothetical scenario, let's say that Richie Larea is back, so we're not worried about the wingback spot at the moment. The two spots that seem to be the most prevalent are a third attacking player. You know, JJ's getting another shout out. His interview with Vanni Sartini, Vanni said he wanted a player who was good at the ball, with the ball at his feet, good in transition, you know, a dangerous attacking piece, which, you know, again, kind of has hints of what they thought Sergio Cordova might be, but wasn't. That transition player who can provide that different ingredient that Brian White maybe, you know, for all his his wonderful attributes, his hold up play, his clinical finishing, his heading, well, maybe you can bring in a different element. They're still on the search for that player. And then the other spot is, and one we see a lot in the comments on the third sub, one we've been focused on the show for a long time, but never quite had a definitive solution, is that center back that makes this system work, right? Ranko Veselinovic, Tristan Blackman, Matias Laborda, all good players in their own right, but it seems like for some reason the chemistry is just not quite where you want it. We've talked about the aerial struggles, especially the Yoye Takaoka and goal, the combination of the center backs they have with the goalkeeper leading to some real problems. But the thing that I've struggled with, Alex, and we're chatting about this before the show, we've chatted about this plenty, is, okay, but who is that center back? Who are you supposed to bring in to fix these problems? And it seems like a really difficult thing, because you essentially want someone. Vanni Sartini likes center backs who are good with the skilled with the ball at their feet, can make more than a simple diagonal pass. Ranko and Tristan Matias can all do that. But then you also want someone who's mobile, good 1v1, good in the air, you know, physical. Well, these kinds of players don't grow on trees, right? These well-rounded defenders who pass and win headers are often not easy to come by. So I wonder what, if anything, Vancouver's going to do defensively this offseason. It's a question of, I guess first there's a question of, is that where they should invest their resources, or should they just go all in on attack, you know, spend all the money on a third designated player who could put the ball in the back of the net, forget about the defending. And then even if they do decide to, okay, bring in a star center back, someone on Twitter told us recently they should bring in a star center back. And I think I supported that idea, but my growing question has been, okay, well, who is that star center? Find that player for me that actually makes sense in terms of a system fit, in terms of their attributes for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Because I think it's actually a little bit harder to come by than you might think.
Yeah, look, I think that's the big question, because, yeah, I think attackers shouldn't be that much of an issue, you know, especially got Junior Hoilett still a potential option. If it's not him, there's more confidence that you can find an option, especially just because you're expected to pay a bit more for attackers anyway. And, you know, you look at some of the...
And it's just a much easier position to evaluate. You know, the data, the metrics we have, the scouting systems, you can do a pretty good job figuring out if attackers are good or if they have weaknesses, how they fit in systems. There's lots of ways to do that. Whereas center backs, at times, it's still a bit of like a black hole where you don't really know what you're getting into until it's too late. And we've seen this with tons of MLS teams that have spent big money, Colorado, Minnesota,
Houston,
they've spent big money on center backs and it's been a complete flaw, right? They have all these underlying things that in theory should make them really good fits, and then it doesn't work out. I mean, obviously it happens at the attacking position as well, but I feel like there's a lot more to go on, generally speaking.
Well, the thing is, stats about center backs lie, because a midfielder who wins a lot of tackles, for example, that means they're everywhere. They got a crazy engine. Like they can win the ball. A center back that wins a lot of tackles could either mean they're incredible ball winners. It could also mean that they're always out of position. They have to make tackles, right? Like, that's the thing. Okay, a stat like an interception might be good for a center back as well. But even then, there's the flip side of, man, they intercept a lot. Oh, but that also means they're always lunging forward. They're always trying to make that risk. And it might mean that, you know, they're getting beat a lot over the top, which there's no real stats for, like, times beaten over the top with the through ball because you were lunging, right? Like, that's, how do you exactly quantify that? It's okay, they have a high passing percentage, but you know, what kind of passes are they making? Is it just 2 foot passes to the person beside them? Then yeah, of course you can have a 98 pass percentage. Is it bigger risks? You're winning a lot of aerial duels, but is it because you're contesting one a game against people that are shorter than you, right? Are you this like constantly like leaving yourself out of aerial duels with 6'4" strikers because you know that you won't win it in your stat pad, right? Like, it's all that to say is that each stat could be positive, it could be negative. I think general rule of thumb is you know, if a lot of stats tend to add up towards what you want, you're like, okay, there's, you know, there's no way that someone who has high intercept numbers, high tackle numbers, good in the air, good passing percentage, okay, like surely there's a good player there. But then the question is, those guys don't really, again, like you mentioned, they don't grow on trees, and they're not as actually common as you think. So of course, yeah, the first and foremost, the eye test is, I think, is a big one, just because sometimes as well, I think center back is the biggest system position, it feels like. Like, I think you can really, you can sign a no name, for lack of a better word, and really make them a star with the right center back system, and vice versa, you can sign a real star and make them look like a no name in the wrong system. Whereas like attacker, yes, you, that's kind of describing all soccer players, but you can put a good attacker in a bad system and he can still score you 12, 15 goals, even if the fit's not there. And, you know, vice versa. Yeah, you could put a terrible attacker in a good system. He might not score just if he's not that good, right? So I think that's what's so tough with the center back. It's, okay, how do you find the right guy? How do you identify? Okay, is he actually good? And then you go through all that with a very small list. Okay, who are the options that are available? So yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think, again, based on what I just said, the best option, there's two ways to go about it. Either you go diamond in the rough and screw it. You go for profile. Okay, maybe it's not as sexy as, you know, some 22-year-old who's starting every game for Flamengo or something like that, who's going to cost you millions. But at least you go for profile. You accept some growing pains as they adapt to the next level. But then you end up with like a Joel Waterman type, where, to be honest, that's what Montreal did very well. Joel Waterman's always a fun case for me, because I think back to that first CPL season, he wasn't the top center back in the league. Heck, it felt like he wasn't the top five. Like, heck, on his own team, most people would have said, oh, they should have looked at Zator or someone like that. Yet Montreal knew they wanted a ball playing outside center back. Waterman was one of the best in the league on the ball. Maybe he was a bit raw defensively because he was a midfielder turning into a center back. Montreal saw the data, went for it, and they got a very good MLS center back, a national team center back out of it. That could be the move for the Whitecaps. Maybe look at some of those guys. Like, for example, there's options right away that stand out. Eric Kobza, he's someone where a former midfielder turning into a center back in Calgary. Very good on the ball, which Vanni Sartini would like. Actually decent in the air. I think he wins about 60% of his duels. So that's something where he was growing into the position, might be more of a profile, you know, ditto with some other names in the CPL. Or, you know, you go screw it. You take the money out, you get that star center back, but just know that, look, those kind of center backs that fits the profile they need, which is good in the air, good on the ball and everything, those players either usually play for, like, they've already signed for like Chelsea or Real Madrid or something like that, or they're going to cost you a heck of a lot of money because they're going to be competing with other, I don't know, you're going to be competing with Eredivisie sides, you're going to be competing with Portuguese league sides. So yeah, it is a bit of an interesting discussion, because now you wonder, like, is it worth it for the Whitecaps to make that big punt? And I think, as we've said, hanging into this offseason, yes, it could, because I think they're in a position where they've loaded up their attack enough to maybe make a punt where, you know, the defensive gains would mean much more than spending money on a fifth, sixth attacker. But also in the same time, like you mentioned, if they go all in, a DP striker could also make more sense than a DP center back, especially if there's more of a chance that you get value out of a 200k center back versus a 200k striker might not get you the value that you'd want, if that all makes sense.
I think that's the thing, right? Is that in an ideal world, maybe if you, so you've got this designated player spot, and then you've got someone you can pay 350k, right? Give them Max Crepeau money. If you knew that signing a DP center back was going to like 100% produce the results you were after, then maybe that's where you'd spend the money. But I think given that the level of uncertainty is very much likely to be higher at the defensive end of the pitch, it might make more sense to just go all in on the attack, get someone, as you said, you know, even if it's not a perfect system fit, if they're talented, if they have the attributes, they're going to find a way to score goals. You know, at the very least, you got Brian White and Ryan Gold up there creating mayhem, and then a third player who could just come in and, you know, clean up the trash or just provide a different threat that at least opens up space for Gold and White. That's going to work to some extent. I mean, even with Sergio Cordova, which was a mess, you know, Leagues Cup there and some matches near the end of his tenure, he was starting to cook a little bit, right? And that was a huge miss of a signing. And even so, there were some parts of it that worked. So, yeah, I feel like if those are the pieces you have to allocate, I would love for them to go out and find the perfect center back and be a much better defensive team. I just feel like my whole instinct is just pointing that, hey, I'm not sure it's going to work out the way you want it to. And maybe the Whitecaps are thinking the same thing, because it seems like there's a lot more focus on finding that key attacking piece than there is on, you know, you don't get Vanni Sartini offseason quotes about them overhauling the defensive line. That doesn't seem to be first thing on the radar, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, and look, that's just the problem with MLS, right? That's the problem with the DP idea. Because look, actually, if you think about it, all things created equal, the DP idea, it makes sense in this from a perspective of, like, you know, you don't want to get too like unbalanced teams. You're able to spend for a few guys. The only problem is DP level players are always going to be attackers, because look, this is Soccernomics 101, right? It's like, for whatever reason, a striker who is top 20 in his position in the world and these days is a $60 million player, right? That's just for goals have always been incredibly valuable. Top five center backs might not touch that money, right? Like, yeah, okay, there's exceptions. You get Virgil van Dijk going to Liverpool for whatever it was, 65 mil at the time. You get Alisson going to Liverpool for 50 million. And hey, look, Liverpool won a Champions League with those guys in a Premier League. So, you know, they put their money where their mouth is. In MLS, it's a whole different story, because it's like you only have three. Like, again, if you're going to use the Liverpool example, like, yeah, it's Premier League, right? Like, of course, they also bought Sadio Mane for a lot of money. So Mo Salah, right? Roberto Firmino, like, in MLS, in this world, you buy your front three, which is the most, look, let's be realistic. If you're building a 4-3-3 team from scratch, your three most expensive players on paper, if you're to bet number nine first, it's probably the two wingers, and maybe the eight will be in the same region of the wingers. So you're going to spend your three DP slots on the front three, and then you're kind of left to compensate for the rest of the rest of everything. So yeah, that's just kind of leaving the situation where it's like, look, all things credit equal, if this is just a salary cap league where you had no DPs, then I have to say 100%, you know what, screw it. You're at the point where the Whitecaps, where you farmed enough value elsewhere, where I'd say definitively go get a center back. They're still at a point where I still think they got enough value at the rest of their roster that if they're going all in on this team, it would be nice to spend some money on a true defensive anchor. But also, it's just something where with MLS, it's never that, like, it's just that the way of the MLS roster build doesn't encourage that. So I'd, again, personally, I'm in charge. I'm still looking for that defender. I don't think I back away from it. But all this to say that I think I agree with agree with Sam, and I think it's telling that Vandy's out there saying you're going to overhaul the attack. They've just kind of realized that, look, it just makes more sense to maybe take that money, put it in a top attacker, and maybe take that risk with a cheaper defender, even if you know it might not pay off, and you end up with a situation where they tried to do that with a Kriefer Yao and someone they didn't end up liking, and then they end up being back at square zero.
Yeah, I guess all I'm trying to point out is near the end of the season, I feel like there was a bit of a sentiment that in the offseason they need to replace or upgrade Yoyi Takaoka and find a new hold it down center back. And my message to those people would be, you know, I might lower your expectations a little bit, because I don't think either of those things might be happening. I think they might just try to find that third attacking piece, make some depth additions, maybe just give Matias Laborda a bigger role and roll with it. And if this is, you know, I'm going to requote something I said a lot during the end of last season, they just need to be an average MLS defensive team. They were mediocre last season. They need to be average. And maybe Axel Schuster and Vanni Sartini don't think they need a star center back in order to do that. They think they can find a way working around the fringes. I think it'll be interesting to see. Like you, Alex, I would love if they could find a different defensive piece, someone who could clean things up at the back when it gets a little bit messy and disorganized. Those second phases of set pieces where, those times where you need like a physical force to just be the bull in China shop and clear stuff out. They don't have that at the moment, not consistently enough. But again, finding that player who also does what Vanni Sartini wants, all these, who's going to be available for not a ridiculous fee. It's tough. So they don't have that much time to do it. Hopefully they've been hitting the books in the off season so far, and we'll see just how they grade out here as the off season goes on. Okay. I mean, on to, I guess, Whitecaps adjacent news and notes. Brian White, congratulations as of today, getting a U.S. men's national team call. He's been knocking on the door, sniffing around for a while, and obviously a tremendous season last year. And and the U.S. men's national team, I think, maybe in a bit of a bit of state of flux, where it gives Brian an opportunity to jump in and see what he can do. So that's amazing. Max Crepeau out at LAFC with Hugo Lloris coming in, crazy, and signing for like less than, what is it, like 400K or something like that. I don't know. I'm imagining the Breaking Bad gif of like, he can't keep getting away with this. The rest of the league, just like Miami and LAFC, just doing ridiculous things that don't make any sense given the roster rules. But somehow they manage to, I'm sure it's with all kinds of like off-field incentives and different ways they can sort of make these players whole without actually having to pay them that much in salary. But for Max Crepeau, I think interesting, he's looking for a new destination. Did win an MLS Cup, but it, under some strange circumstances, obviously the major injury, only came back midway through this season. I guess it was, I don't know if you're Max, it was both everything you hope for in LA and also probably pretty disappointing at the end of the day. So I wonder where he goes now. And and something I put in the notes here, and I think Alex has a similar question. My thought was, looking back, is Max Crepeau happy with his decision to leave Vancouver and go to LAFC, given the way the last couple of years have turned out? I think it's an interesting one. Only Max knows the answer to that question. But it both turned out as well as he could have hoped, and then also probably had some, he went to try to win an MLS Cup, but at the same time, it came with some pretty serious challenges personally.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating question. I think the answer is yes. Ultimately, he wanted to leave to win and go to a team like LA, and he got that. So I think that's a win. But it's just funny, because I'd say funny more just because at the end of the day, LA, I think it's more just, I guess ironic would be maybe more the word to use, just that, again, a chance like LA, you think it would make sense. He gets to be a star. He becomes recognized across the league. There's a chance he becomes Canada's number one now, yet he's stuck in a situation where he's now a free agent because they went, all right, screw it, let's go sign Hugo Lloris for the exact same money Max was on. And the thing is, I say the irony in all this is that Crepeau signed an extension in 2019. I just hear July 30th, 2019, that extended him through 2022 with a new option for 2023. So basically, I think the common logic for Crepeau is they win MLS Cup lot in 22, just re-sign him to a new deal. But then the injury happens, so maybe that's why that doesn't happen. They're not sure how he comes back. Now he's in a situation. Look, I think he's in a good spot. So I'd say the irony will end well with him, just because he's a free agent. He will probably get offered at least 500K to 600K to be one of the better paid goalkeepers in MLS, should he stay in MLS. And of course, what's nice is that he is a free agent. He can go to Europe, for example. Look, he's mentioned, I could want to go to Europe. Makes sense. In the national team goalkeeper hierarchy, despite there being some good MLS options, the one in Europe in Milan Boyan has had the edge, just because, oh, he's in Europe, he's playing Champions League, etc. And I think that's important to note, especially in light of, again, well, we touched on it here, the Kamal Miller move. That one, like, you got a feel for Kamal Miller in that one, just because he was in a similar situation, free agent at the end of this year. looked like he was like, oh, I might consider Europe. And at the beginning of the year in Montreal, he said that Montreal moves him on. And you're like, oh, okay, this feels like them realizing he might be gone after this year and go to a Europe on a free. He ends up in Miami. All of a sudden, Messi and friends are there. He's having a great time winning trophies. Like, you know what? Actually, who needs Europe? I got Messi, Busquets, everyone here. But then they're like, you know what? Screw it. We need a new center back. You're gone. And all of a sudden, he just resigned, being like, oh, like, I want to be that in this situation. And now he's, you know, stuck. Not to say he's stuck in Portland, like a team in Europe could buy him and make that fee. But look, it's an easier entryway for especially someone who's 26, 27, 28, like guys like Crepeau and Miller are, to go to Europe on a free. Take my, like, look what happened to Richie Larea, right? He did that same thing. He let his contract run out. He was able to go to Forest. Oh, all things considered, it was a pretty good run. Like, the only reason Larea's in where he's in is because they made it to the Premier League. At the end of the day, he got to play his part in the championship team going up to the Premier League, first time in 20 years, historic club, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, I think for Crepeau, what's nice is that he was able to retain this flexibility. But it's just kind of funny that you thought that, okay, he's going to go to LAFC. They made back-to-back MLS Cup finals. He can finally get paid like he deserves to get paid. Now he's stuck in a situation where he's a free agent, but I guess at the very least, he does have the leverage. But all that to say, he would have earned the same money in Vancouver. So I think that's interesting because now you can ask yourself the question. This is the point I was trying to make before I got lost there. He could have been on the same money if he stays at Whitecaps, given how good he was. Because we mentioned with LAFC, they were phenomenal in 2021, had terrible goalkeeping. They just needed an average goalkeeper. They got an above average one. They won an MLS Cup and made another one. With the Whitecaps, say how much we said, oh, all of a sudden they're a good team, above average goalkeeping. Could he have maybe pushed their pendulum from a team that finished fifth in the West to a team that finished third, second, or first, and all of a sudden contends for MLS Cups? And then he could have very much been in the exact same scenario while making the exact same money. That's, I think, the interesting thing out of all this. Because if he got an extension with them, with LA, it's a whole different story. But the fact that he was on his original Whitecaps contract, that's kind of the food for thought.
And hypothetically, he may have been a position too where, I mean, people look at that LAFC team and yes, Max Crepeau is a part of it, but they're not going to go, oh, well, Max Crepeau is really the guy that makes the difference. Whereas I feel like in Vancouver, if he was able to provide above average goalkeeping, he was already one of the most prominent faces of the squad. And if he'd stayed in Vancouver, continued to be that additive piece, he could have really carved out his role in a major way where he might even be able to command in this hypothetical world more money as like the top paid keeper in MLS or one of the top two, three, if he was still at the Whitecaps at this point. I think it's interesting. I mean, this is why these things are always interesting to look back on. But at the same time, I think, you know, if you're Max, and I try to think about this in terms of, you know, life decisions that I've made, you have to ask yourself, was it the right decision at the time? You can't go back and say, oh, well, given all these things I know now, was that the right decision 5 years ago? Well, you didn't know all those things you know now 5 years ago. You just have to go back and ask yourself, well, did I make the right move for me given what I knew at the time? And I think for Max at the time, the Whitecaps were in dysfunction. His, you know, good friend and manager had just been sacked. He didn't necessarily see the roadmap in Vancouver to success. Maybe he was looking for a change of pace. He wanted to be a bigger name on a bigger team with a chance to win. That was a no-brainer for him at the time. He was getting paid the same either way, so might as well go somewhere where, you know, the opportunity excited him and he felt like there was the opportunity, the chance for real growth. So, I think it's just very interesting the way this has turned out. And as I said, both being kind of exactly what Max hoped for, and then in some ways it's sort of ended in a bit of a tough fashion. But as you said, he's well poised to either make a move to Europe or be a very well compensated goalkeeper in MLS. I mean, yeah, above average MLS keepers who are domestic, that's a hot commodity, right? No, so is he an international for all but the Canadian teams, which is just that. I remember when he moved to LA, that was the big thing, right? Because he didn't spend enough time in an MLS academy, or is just because the only
he was grand he was one where he missed the grandfathering of the rule by a year, I think it was.
Okay.
That was his
I remember thing. There was something really weird about that. So say for example, so someone out of the Whitecaps Academy now, say like a Matteo, I know Matteo Campagna is gone, but someone like that, if they were to play for the Whitecaps and then get transferred to a Portland, they would count as a domestic.
Well, that's basically why you've seen a rash of guys like Baldissimo got picked up by San Jose because he was a domestic. Luca Petrasso got traded from Toronto to Orlando. Like there's countless examples of guys under 26 who've kind of fallen under that rule. And why we've seen more Canadians playing, popping up for American MLS teams because of that rule. But unfortunately, like Max, it was that generation of like, I think he's what, like a 96 it is or a 95. He might even be a 94, actually. I think he's like almost, I will just confirm because no need to guess. He's a 94. So yeah, he turns 30 this year. He was like, it basically was like guys 95 or 96 or later. I think it was something like that that got it. But yeah, no, I think all this to say, it's very important to note. I mean, of course, you know, Crepo, how things ended in Vancouver, of course, there's always going to be reasons to him to be not the most appreciated character over here. But look, it's you know, he's a very nice guy. Anyone who's had a chance to deal with him, he's top class pro. So happy that he was able to get that chance to win and potentially become Canada's number one. Excited to see what happens for the future. All this exercise was to say, I think it's more from a Whitecaps perspective. Crepo would have been fine anywhere, right? Like he's a top goalkeeper. They could have won MLS Cup if he stayed in Vancouver. He won one MLS Cup in LAFC, right? There's no doubt about his talent. But all this to say, you look back from the Whitecaps perspective, like they didn't end up half bad. Like they got a boatload of allocation money for him. They were able to upgrade their squad. All this to say, it shows that sometimes, yeah, trades may suck in the near future, but it really shows that like you can only ultimately judge them for what they become down the road. And that's not to say you want to take bad trades because they might age well, but you know, sometimes a trade that might be hard to stomach or you want to, you know, go Max Crepo enemy number one. At the end of the day, I'd say it's pretty like it's, you know, maybe of course LAFC emerged as winners. They did well, but the Whitecaps didn't end up completely screwing themselves over. And I think a good example is this kind of reminds me of the Julian Gressel trade with a lot less fanfare. Like Gressel just realized, okay, or like all parties realized, maybe not the best fit in Vancouver. The Whitecaps got good allocation money for an expiring contract. Gressel won an MLS Cup and left to another club. Like it's one of those where that's just sometimes the nature of the business. And I think it's just funny to see how things play out a few years later. And you kind of realize like, wow, the takes at the time were, it was just funny to see how everything has aged, all that to say.
One that always stands out for me is younger Sam was incredibly disappointed when Kakuta Mane was dealt for Tony Chani. And now you look back on something like that, you realize that like it really didn't matter at all. But at the time, Kakuta seemed like an important part of the future in Vancouver. And, you know, things were, you know, he was on that run of form and you're like, oh, how could you let such a valuable player go? And then, you know, football moves very quickly, times change. And yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, really, I think in looking back on it, it really didn't turn out too bad for the Whitecaps. They're able to sort of, I think, clear that era a little bit as well. Like there was a bit of an organizational funk of the struggles, the bottom of the table performances. Also Max being very closely linked with Mark. I think that could have been a bit weird if he'd stayed, and you know, there were some feelings of resentment about the club moving on. I think in the big picture, it just made sense to have a bit of a clean break. And it seems like, you know, ultimately we'll see where Max ends up, but I think it's probably worked out for the best for all parties.
Yeah, and I'd say now he's a free agent. Imagine if, could it make sense for the Whitecaps to throw like a 600, 700K at him and be like, you know, let bygones be bygones. Who knows if that'll ever happen. I'm sure there'll be other teams lining up the door first. But yeah, funny times. Otherwise, in news and notes, just to quickly roll through, as mentioned, Kamal Miller and James Pantemis former Montrealers together from that 2021 and then 2022 team, end up together at Portland, joining Zach McGrath. So all of a sudden, the Portland usually plays a back four, although we'll see, you know, of course, they fired Gio Savarese this year. We'll see what they end up doing. But all of a sudden, if in a back four, Kamal Miller, left center back, Zach McGrath, right center back, James Pantemis, goalkeeper, if they go on a run, might be worth keeping an eye out for those fans of the Canadian men's national team. So I thought that was just funny that in Cascadia, there's a possibility where the Portland might be starting more Canadians in the white cap. So, you know, more the reason to keep, you know, what they say, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. It's more of a reason for white caps and Canadian fans to keep a close eye on what Portland's up to, just because I thought that was interesting, especially the Miller one. Look, it's a very good signing. You just got a feel for Miller that he got kind of feels like he got hosed over just because it's the fact that he didn't, like, it's MLS. I'm sure he probably, you know, consented somewhat to the trade, but again, it's MLS, not a transfer like in Europe where he's like, yeah, send me to Portland, just I want to raise there, right? Like, now he's stuck on this deal for a few years when I'm sure he would have loved to crack at Europe, and who knows, that could end up impacting his national team future and all that. So just you gotta feel for him. So I'll be kind of, you know, just rooting that he can you know, prove that he's a best 11 quality defender in Portland. But maybe for the from the Whitecaps perspective, they'll just hope it's not in Cascadia Cup games and it doesn't result in them finishing above them in the MLS standings or anything like that. Otherwise, some fun adjacent news, just because why not? Lucas Cavallini, remember him? He left Tijuana, but I guess don't worry or don't fear, whatever, Whitecaps fans, not coming to Vancouver. But he's going back to old stomping grounds in Puebla. And, you know, maybe not literally stomping grounds. That is BC Place, after all, as someone pointed out in my mention. So shout out for that joke. But hopefully for his perspective, he can find the goals there. Because for all the temperament he's at on the pitch, he's always an honest and upfront guy to deal with, you know, like off of it as well. So hopefully he can find some goals there. And, you know, just the thing is with Cava, he always had such a trying time in Vancouver. But one thing you can never fault the guy for was giving 110%. If anything, that was almost the problem at times, that he was giving too much effort. And, you know, it was not saying that's a bad thing, but that's how you end up stepping on some guy's head by accident. And lastly, just a bit of a fun one, Theo Bear, former Whitecaps youngster, young forward, you know, had a heck of a week in Scotland. You know, big week for him with Motherwell. Had a 2-goal, 1-assist game, and they're all, the 2 goals he scored were both lovely. One was a great chip. I think they're actually both great chips, just different kind of chips. And then he also added a goal. So he made this is a bit of a fun one, but he made the EAFC 24 team of the week with a pretty snazzy card. And I thought that was just, you know, that's fun. So you don't see all that many Canadians. I think he might be one of the first ones this year to get a team of the week card. Like, Canadians don't get that many special cards unless it's Alphonso Davies or Jonathan David these days. So I thought it was pretty cool to see Theo Bear step up like that. And hopefully he can keep finding form for Motherwell, because since he's gone to Scotland at the beginning of 2022, he's had some great flashes, some runs of goals, but just consistent minutes have been hard to come by, and goals in back-to-back games can only help. And look, that's a former Whitecap Academy graduate. It's good for the Whitecaps if he goes on and does great things, because, you know, it's only good for the program.
Yeah, great to see Theo doing well over in Scotland. I mean, still only 24 years old. I feel like just because Theo was around for so long in Vancouver, it feels like he's a wily veteran. But yeah, finding some form, great to see him in the goals and doing well. Circling back, I mean, same thing for Cava. Just despite some of the on pitch antics at times and the fact it didn't work out that great in Vancouver, nice to see him in a new spot, and I'm sure he'll do well there. And then with Miller and Pantemis, it leaves me in the strange position, especially if those two start consistently, of like seeing Portland on the pitch and maybe having some positive feelings, which is going to maybe take me a bit to get over. That's certainly one that to circle on the calendar this upcoming season. And I mean, right into that, you know, there's a good slate of matchups in the MLS schedule for Vancouver this season, including all those Cascadian fixtures, which we'll dive into in a moment here. But the one thing I wanted to mention before that, just for the listeners that have tuned in this long, I mean, you might already be on top of this, but as Alex mentioned earlier on the show, January 6th, the players are, you know, reporting and shuffling into Vancouver. Medicals on the 7th and 8th. So all this upcoming here real quick, especially if you're listening to this podcast a couple of days after it's released, the players will be in Vancouver already and then traveling to Spain, the 9th, 10th, and doing again, that kind of warm weather camp that they did last season. And then obviously, you know, at the beginning of they're going to be there for a while. They're going to travel back to Vancouver at the end of the month and then over to Langford for that matchup, the first round matchup against Tigres on the 7th, the second leg in Mexico on the 14th. So that's really your runway for the next month and a bit. After that, you know, they'll return home from Mexico. They'll be in their full training camp in advance of the MLS regular season. And then at the beginning of March 2nd, BC plays versus Charlotte. The MLS season will get underway in earnest. So that's your outline for the next couple months, at least in terms of the Whitecaps movements. We'll obviously be with you every step in the way, whether it's the camp in Spain, whatever news and notes we get from there. And then as they wind up towards Champions Cup.
Yeah, and of course, another thing to keep an eye out on, other than the fact that the second leg of Champions Cup being on Valentine's Day is either going to be very prophetic or very painful for the Whitecaps' perspective. But should they win that Valentine's Day tie decider, the second round, I think it's officially the round of 16, because now there's this round one is what they're in, will be on that March 5th, 6th, or 7th week right after the Charlotte game. So just something to keep an eye on that. Because of the weird schedule, they wouldn't have to play another Champions League or Champions Cup game before the season because of the fact that it's staggered across 4 weeks and they're in the first bracket of 2 weeks. So they would get some time off to focus on the MLS season either way, should they win or lose. So that's something to keep an eye out. Some other fun dates from the schedule release. July 6th, they'll play CF Montreal in Montreal. It's always nice, those intra-Canada games. They'll play April 6th, Toronto FC at home for the first time since 22. Of course, we'll have to see the Canadian Championship draw, what that looks like as well. Then in Cascadia, they play six times, again against Cascadia with the weird unbalanced schedule. But that's a bonus for fans. This time after playing Seattle home twice last year and Portland away twice, the Whitecaps, of course, have had it reversed. They'll be hosting Portland at home twice, going away there once, of course. And then meanwhile, they'll go to Seattle away twice, which honestly, it's a win-win for the Whitecaps, Whitecaps fans, because you get one big away trip to Portland, which is always a good trip. Always recommend that one. For those who haven't made it, or even for those who've made it, they'll know how good it is. But then you get to go to Seattle away twice, which is nice because as much as I love Portland, it's one where it's usually an overnight trip, which can be a little heftier to do multiple times in a season. But the fact that Seattle, you can definitely do in one night, that they get the two of those this year, it's almost nicer in a sense to have it all add up like that for Cascadia games. Otherwise, some important dates. Decision day is October 19th. They'll be away at RSL this year. That tracks, it's kind of been on and off over the last few years. They're home last year, away to Minnesota the year before, and then it was at home to Seattle the year before. So it's just continues that rotation of home away. And the fun one, just we'll mention, it's, I think it could be huge for the Whitecaps, like genuinely a huge opportunity if they use it right. Inter Miami's coming on May 25th, and that's a fun one for the nerds because that's the first time they'll have ever played Inter Miami in anything. Assuming unless they somehow meet in Champions Cup, which wouldn't happen till a final, if I'm mistaken. It's just wild because this is Miami's fourth, fifth year in the league. But it's cool because it's that BC place. And of course, for those I'm sure unless you've been living under the biggest of rocks, the likes of Lionel Messi play there. Of course, he's the one that everyone knows about. And, the likes of Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez have all joined them. And I just say that's a huge opportunity because, I'm not even going to dive into it. Is Miami a contender? Are they not? Because that's a whole other discussion. That just seems to be hilarious. This mix of people being like, they're going to walk the league. And then other people like, they're going to finish last. Who knows? We'll see how their bodies hold up. But all that to say, ticket interest, I have to imagine, will be pretty high to see Lionel Messi playing BC Place. So there's a chance that the Whitecaps should not only beat their BC Place record for Whitecaps MLS era game, which is, 30, just over 30,000 from last year's playoff, but it could end up, this feels like a 40, 55K sellout potential. Which is, hey, yes, a lot of those fans might be there to go see Messi, but at the end of the day, this could be a huge chance for the Whitecaps to grab the interest of the sport, especially if or sorry, not so the sport is the casual fan or those who might be there, knowing that if the Whitecaps go toe to toe with the Inter Miami, or they win, or they play a good game, or score some goals, that hey, maybe two people realize like, okay, there's an entertaining team to keep an eye on. So I thought that was very fun, and it made sense. Look, as soon as Messi said he would play on turf, it changed things because all of a sudden you see how Charlotte, Chicago, these teams, especially Chicago, because they've struggled to get more than what, 5,000, 6,000 a game, and they got a sold out stadium as soon as Messi came. That shows, that captures interest, and especially the fact that BC Place is, I think it's the sixth biggest stadium in MLS. It's a big venue. It would make sense from a marketing perspective. And yeah, you can argue like it's cheesy and, okay, is this going to be growing the game to have fans in the building cheering for an opponent player? They're all valid arguments, and I'm sure we can dive into it more as that game nears. But at the end of the day, it's a chance for the Whitecaps to play in front of more eyeballs. And, as far as marketing goes, you'd rather be playing in front of more eyeballs rather than less, no matter the circumstances. So I just think that's a unique opportunity for. And hey, it's a unique opportunity for those in the city to go see Messi play if you haven't already. I've hopefully, if he ends up being healthy, but having seen him live, he is incredibly fun to watch live. So it's an opportunity again, as someone who just likes soccer. It's cool that this opportunity will happen to Vancouver, because it hasn't happened very often with Stars, either just because they don't get them in the schedule if they're in the East, or as we've seen with a lot of them, they'll pull out from the turf before they even get here.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add there other than your point about just getting more butts in seats, more eyeballs on the event. I mean, so okay, an average Vancouver Whitecaps match, you're getting between 18 and 20K. You might get 45 for this. If you can turn 1,000 of those viewers that come to the Messi match into people that buy a couple more match day tickets for Vancouver Whitecaps matches, if you're able to turn some of those into season ticket holders, even people who just, hey, they're gonna, I roll my eyes as I say this a little bit, but they're gonna sign up for MLS on Apple TV to watch more Vancouver Whitecaps matches, watch more Messi, just more awareness and understanding of the league, the team, just having that context. I think that can be one of the hardest things, especially in the era now of, I find this as someone who, like, admittedly, the biggest sports sicko out there. Like, I will watch Aussie rules football, I'll watch anything. But, as we're transitioning away from the cable TV towards subscription services for everything, unless you have that moment where you catch some sport you haven't seen before, you catch a team in a league you haven't seen before, you might just lack the context or the reason to go seek that out, right? And I think honestly, for for someone who's new to Vancouver, well, if it's on Apple TV and you don't know any of the players, you don't really know the team, you don't know the league that well, there's no reason, like, oh, well, I don't know, there's this team that plays football here, but I don't know that much about it. But if you go to this Messi match, you see the team, you understand the league, you're like, wow, this is an incredible environment venue. Might be a bit of false advertisement because not every match is going to look like the Messi match, but it gives you that context that maybe draws you in, piques your interest, and you might get some of those people coming back. And I think that that's, for better or worse, the way the league has marketed it, the way everything's been about Messi over the last 6, 8 months can be a bit nauseating at times, but the knock-on effect, I think, for the visibility, the marketability, the reputation, and just the understanding of the league has been massive. And I think will produce some huge knock-on effects in the long term, which are really, really positive for football in North America, provided that MLS stops being ridiculous and trying to pull their clubs out of the US Open Cup, which you didn't even talk about. But good on US soccer for standing them down in that regard. And hopefully this is never something that gets broached in terms of the Canadian Championship, because I would be, and Alex, I think I could probably speak for you as well, where I would be irate if that were to occur.
We'll save that for another time. So I think we've already ran a bit long, but it was quite frankly absurd of a decision from MLS. Because, yeah, again, it adds up to the point of, look, yes, the way Messi can be marketed is, I agree, perfect way to put it, nauseating. But also, like, it's, again, it's about as free, like, as of course not free, they put a lot of money to get him in. But in terms of bringing eyeballs to the sport, you think of soccer right now, Messi is pretty much near the top of the list. People are going to pay attention to where he is and what he does. And the reality is, it's hard sometimes for us to understand as sickos that, yeah, okay, if I'm like, we're sickos that if you send me to a town in France, like Rodé or something like that, I'll know, okay, yeah, they got a team in like the third tier, I'm going to go watch them. Not everyone knows that sort of stuff is going on. And, you know, that there's just, even like within towns, they might not know what the Whitecaps are, or even they might know they're there, but not really know the schedule, right? Like even little things like that, which to us sickos, again, is very complimentary because I'm a proud sicko. Yeah, you know what the MLS schedule drops. You know where everyone is. You know who plays what. Not everyone might be onto that. And I think having a guy like Messi all of a sudden brings you to the eyeballs. Oh, okay, this is what it is. Oh, this is entertaining. Oh, like, this is what this all means. And I think it's good to capitalize on that. And it pisses me off that they get out of the US Open Cup, because that's a chance, especially if, man, Inter Miami drew, like, you know, another smaller team and they had a chance to play. And also pisses me off that apparently in that Messi documentary they did on Apple, they like gloss over the fact they made a run in Open Cup and more focused on the run they made in Leagues Cup. That sort of stuff angers me. But also on the flip side, it is good to see teams like the Whitecaps be like, all right, this is a Whitecaps team that historically used to pack BC Place, has the potential to pack BC Place. Okay, maybe this messy jolt of Whitecaps playing an Inter Miami team they otherwise would have never played could be the jolt they need. And hopefully they can continue to use that messy effect for good versus some of the bad they've also done with it. It's been a bit of a 50-50.
Yeah, well, it'll be very, very interesting to see when May 25th comes along what the environment is like in BC Place. And I'm thinking, Alex, what will the press box look like? Probably a lot of names and faces we haven't seen before should pack it out. So, you know, yeah, all press is good press to some extent. So I think it'll be fun. It'll certainly be interesting. Hopefully it's an entertaining match. But you know, we've got a lot of work to do both on the podcast, the Whitecaps as a team, before we get to that point. So yeah, I hope everyone's enjoyed our return to form in 2024. Looking forward to many more here on the Third Sub. I gave him a shout out earlier, but Caleb's been doing a bunch of good work on the website. So whether it's Demir Krylak, the MLS Super Draft picks, just what the Whitecaps should do as they head into 2024, he's put out pieces on all those subjects. I'd encourage you to check it out. If I can find something coherent to say about what kind of center back the Whitecaps should sign, you might see something on the site in the near future. And obviously we're going to have you up to date, you know, not only on the podcast, but also in written form on everything that's going to transpire here as the Whitecaps will rev up towards their regular season. And then, you know, CPL signing, stuff like that. We'll obviously document what's going on elsewhere in Canada as those seasons get closer and closer here as 2024 pushes on, Alex. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be exciting to dive into the start of a new season and everything that comes with it. So much excitement, so much still to happen, lots of movement. But yeah, I guess on that note, we'll leave you because we've definitely exhausted a fair few subjects. To be honest, I'd say not bad, considering we've been away for a month that we only had this much to talk about. Certainly next week, maybe we'll be able to come in a bit more condensed and everything. But yeah, it was certainly a pleasure just to get back into this, because fun season lies ahead. And yeah, it feels far away, but it's also quite close. So we'll make sure to stay on top of all that. But on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Ruzic, on Threads and Instagram at AJ on the Case. And hoping to post, took a bit of a break just with, holiday vacation. Went to Hawaii for a week, which is great, by the way. Just nothing better than spending time on a beach and just enjoying the culture and the food and everything that the island of Kauai, very underrated gem, as Sam can attest to, has to offer. But definitely excited now to get starting to get the itch again. For a minute there, I was like, screw all these MLS trades and all this stuff, and now I'm like, all right, let's go start feeding it to me. Let's you're starting to check all the European transfer rumors, lots of good stuff. So I'll continue to follow along, and of course the start of the domestic season.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. This is a very entertaining time of year to be watching sports, and just adding some North American domestic football into the mix will only make it better. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robot on Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it. You can find our podcast at Third Sub Pod. You can find, our overall the Mothership channel at The Third Sub. As I mentioned, all those articles up there on the site, podcasts, you know where to find us. Leave a like, a review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Hope you're having a good start to 2024, and we'll chat again soon.